Hello everyone. So today we are going to touch upon the Negotiable Instruments Act. And of course, with the advent of time, there are changes required. And Negotiable Instrument Act, which has withstood the challenge of time, has now some new things have come up, and therefore there's a amendments to that act. That's how this chapter will cover the amendments to the Negotiable Instrument Act. What it is objective of this chapter is that what are the latest amendments to the Negotiable Instrument. As I said, this act has withstood the test of time and has been found useful over a period of many years, but with changing scenarios, changing technology, changing environment, things change, and therefore the law has to keep up to it. And the way to change the law is either change the entire law or make amendments to the existing law. So if you find minor changes and overall the act is good, there are small amendments which come into the act. If you need to overhaul the entire act, then you have to change the entire act by itself. So Negotiable Instrument Act, there are amendments only to it. So it will be very specific changes that have come. And in this chapter, we will cover those changes that have come in this act. So the structure of the chapter is obviously the introduction. The purpose of Negotiable Instruments Amendment Act 2018, why it was changed, what has changed in it, section 143A and section 148 is what we will cover here, and the conclusion that why it was there, what is the latest impact of this changes. So Negotiable Instrument Act was amended, and the new amendment was known as Banking Public Financial Institution and Negotiable Instrument Laws Amendment Act 1988. Wherein a new chapter, which is chapter 617, was incorporated for penalties in case of dishonor of checks due to insufficiency of funds in the account of the drawer of the check. What it means is that there was cases found where people would issue check without having the necessary amount in the account there, or by the time the check was due, the necessary amount was not in the check, in the bank account. The result of this was there was a dishonor of check. That means the person to whom the check was given, when he deposited the check in his account, he would not get the money. Now, this led to a lot of litigations and issues and reasons and interest factors and so on and so forth. Therefore, the government decided to change, make the amendments into this particular area, which led to dishonor of checks. So Section 138 of Negotiable Instrument Act actually talks about the dishonor of check for insufficiency of funds in an account. It explains when this scenario can happen, what are the exceptions, what are the punishments and or fine if you breach this section. Why this section was introduced? As I said, these provisions were incorporated so that you could encourage the use of check. There must be sanctity for the check. So when you issue the check, the person who gets the check should know that I will get my money. So the credibility of the instrument has to be there. Otherwise, still the credit of the amount takes place. It's just a piece of paper. So this piece of paper was to be made stronger. Therefore, this amendment has come. Now, this amendment made the dishonor of a check a criminal offense, and fixed a criminal liability also on the person who has issued this check, or known as the drawer of the check. So the purpose of this amendment was to fix responsibility on the issuer or the drawer, as it is called, and emphasize that issuing a check is a serious business, and therefore there must be a lot of serious thought and provision before check is issued, because a check should be actually treated like a cash. Only difference is that it is just going to be credited in couple of days or couple of on the due date as agreed. And therefore, the dishonor of check, signature mismatch and stop payment also was included in this. Now, the amendment to the act was proposed and addressed the issue of undue delay in final resolution of check dishonor cases. So they found that if you go to the court, it takes time. So to reduce that and get a resolution faster, the amendment was made, and also made it so clear that the litigation itself was not required, and that if you don't require litigation, then it would save time and money. That was the thought behind it. And of course, generally by strengthening the credibility of check, what is happening is you help the trade and commerce in general by allowing the lending institution, including banks, because they give you loans and they take sometimes they take check, otherwise they take standing instructions and various other forms. So if they check, they should be very confident that the check will be honored. And if there is a dishonor to this check, then they have legal recourse to work with you and get their money back. So as we said, this all started when the central government started receiving several representations from the public, and especially the trading banking community, related to pendency of check dishonor case. They say because not everyone does it, but there is a kind of a delay tactics of the unscrupulous drawers of dishonored checks, where they just use it to delay the payment that is required and then make it more difficult by easy filing of appeals and obtaining stay on the proceeding. So they make the stay, the payment is not need to be done, and they kind of extend this delay the payments, thereby putting a lot of strain on the person who has actually given goods or given money before, and they don't recover their money in time. So the government, after consultation with the industry players, made the amendments with the following aim. So one, they wanted to reduce the undue delay in the check dishonor cases. Two, they wanted to make a provision for payment of interim compensation to the complainant. So if someone complains, at least till the decision is made, whether it was right, wrong, or there was a, you know, it was by chance or by mistake, by error or by design, the check was bounced, at least they get some money so that their whole payment is not withheld. And the main object of the amendment was to ease the dealing of the business. So add more comfort in getting the checks. So in order to strengthen the ease of doing business in India, the Parliament passed the Negotiable Instrument Amendment Act 1881 and inserted two new sections in the Negotiable Instrument Act 1881. What are those two sections? Section 143A and Section 148. So what is Section 143A all about? It is power to direct interim compensation. So interim compensation means when the hearing is going on, the judge is yet to decide who's right, who's wrong, they can give some interim compensation to the person who got the check in good faith and deposited in good faith. Second, in Section 148, they also gave the power to the appellate court to order payment pending appeal against conviction. So if the first level court made the case in favor of the person who received the check, and let's say the drawer went to the appellate court saying, no, that was wrong and I'm still right, then the appellate court also got powers to issue direction to make the payment while this is going on. And therefore, this Section 148 gave that power to the appellate court. So let's look at this Section 143 in little more detail. So it says the section empowers the court to order the drawer of the check, that means who issues the check, to pay interim compensation to the complainant in case of summary trial. So while the trial has just started, someone has put a case and you are representing your data, the court can order interim compensation. Or in the summons case where the drawer pleads not guilty to the allegation made in the complaint. So second scenario is that the drawer said he is not guilty, and still the court says, okay, while you may not be guilty, still the money is not cleared and therefore pay so much amount to the person who is asking for it. Any other case among framing of charges. So apart from these two areas, if there is any other case of other details, then they say, okay, let us frame the charges that yes, prima facie there is a case, then the court can order interim compensation to the complainant. So while any court, while trying a check dishonored case, they order the check, drawer of the check to pay interim compensation as we discussed, and where the drawer pleads not guilty to the accusation made, and any other case among framing of charges, the provision further stated that interim compensation should not exceed 20% of the amount of the check. That means they have also put a limit. So they said if the check of 100 rupees issued And the court, in its wisdom, feel that prima facie, it looks like there was some kind of goof up or some kind of mistake at the drawer's end also. And the drawer also pleads not guilty. Still, the court feels that the complainant could be right. Then they can issue, tell the drawer to pay 20% maximum of the amount of check to the complainant. And of course, now after it is ordered, there must be fixed time in which this payment must be paid to the complainant, and the prescribed time limit of 60 days from the date of passing the order by the court. And if the drawer asks for extension, then an extended period of 30 days if it is allowed or directed by the court. So in short, you have, if the court decides that you have to pay interim compensation, then within 60 days of passing of this order, you have to pay the compensation. Or if you have some challenges organizing that 20%, then you go back to the court and say it, you may take more time. The court in its wisdom may decide to give you maximum up to another 30 days so that in within 90 days you have to pay if the court so desires. So it has been specifically provided that if the drawer of the check is acquitted, that means he is found not guilty, then the court will direct the complainant to repay to the drawer the amount of interim compensation which has paid. Now, obviously, this is while the case is going on. Like in the end of it, if the drawer is found not guilty or is acquitted of the charge, for some reason it bounced, but he is not responsible for it, then the court can direct the complainant that whatever money you got as an interim compensation, please pay back it to the drawer. Also, pay with interest at the bank rate as published by RBI. So, beginning of the relevant financial year. So, not only do you have to give back the money in case you filed a complaint and the court order is against you, but you will also have to pay the interest for the duration of the time you have used this money. And again, in this case, that you can, the court gives you 60 days to make the payment, and if you have some challenge, you go back to the court, another 30 days can be added. So in short, within 60 days or within 90 days, the complainant will have to give back the compensation, interim compensation that was paid to him along with the interest. So within 60 days, or if the court directs, then another 30 days can be given to you. So it takes care of both the sides. So it is telling the drawer that while the discussion, the case is going on, please pay maximum up to 20% to the complainant. And it also gives an amendment to the complainant that if the complainant is found not correct, or if the drawer is acquitted, the other way to look at it, then the money, that interim compensation that was paid to the complainant has to give back along with interest within 60 days, or an extension maximum of 30 days can be provided by the court if the court so agrees to it. So again, to sum it up, the interim compensation can be only up to 20% of the amount of the check, and it has to be paid within 60 days from the date of payment. Maximum extension of 30 days is permitted. So interim compensation, it has to be recovered in case the drawer is is found not guilty of any mistake. Then this is in accordance of section 421 of CRPC, which is Criminal Process Code, which enlists two modes of recovery of fine. It says either you attach and sale a movable property of the drawer, or as arrears of land revenue for movable or immovable property of the drawer by way of issuing a warrant to the collector of the concerned district. So there is two ways under in section 421 as per CRPC through which you can recover the fine. One is you take the attach the property, movable property of the drawer, and sell it and then pay the compensation. Or from the land revenue of movable or immovable property, attach it and issue the warrant to the collector of the concerned district. Now, if the drawer of the check is acquitted, the complainant, of course, has to repay the drawer the amount of interim compensation, and as we discussed, along with the interest of the bank rate. This repayment also has to be paid within 60 days of the date of order, or an extension, maximum extension of 30 days can be provided by the court if the court desires. So the only difference what they made is section 143A is not made applicable retrospectively. That means it will apply to the cases from henceforth and not which cases which are already there with the courts. So that is some relief given to the older ones and to ensure that going forward, these things are minimized. Now let's look at section 148. Now section 148 is in case of appeal filed the drawer against the conviction under section 138. So previously, if the court found the drawer guilty or convicted, then the drawer can go to the appellate court or file an appeal. So what can the appellate court do? So they made modifications to section 148 also. So the appellate court may order the appellant to deposit a sum, which is again minimum percent of 20% of the fine or the total compensation awarded by the trial court. So if the trial court says that you have issued a check of 100 rupee, please pay full 100 rupee, then the appellate court and the drawer says, okay, it was not my mistake, but it is still found guilty, and the drawer goes to the appeal section, then the appellate court will tell to the drawer, okay, deposit that 20% money with us, which is 20 rupees in this case, and then we will see going forward what needs to be done. The provision also makes changes that the amount payable shall be in addition to any interim compensation already paid by the applicant under section 143A. That means I have, as a drawer, if I have issued a check which has bounced and there is a complaint against me, one, in the normal jury case or in the normal discussion that takes place in the court, and if the court orders that I have to pay 20% interim money compensation to the person who's put a case against me, so I will give 20 rupees to that person within 60 days or 90 days as the case may be, and then the court finds me guilty and the complainant right, and I want to appeal against it. So when I go to the appeal court, the appeal court will say, okay, add 20 more rupees you put and give it to the court till they decide the final order, and the 20 rupees that I've already paid to the complainant remains with the complainant. So therefore, I am out of pocket by 40 rupees in that sense. And of course, again, the same concept they have extended. They have said, so in the amount has to be deposited within 60 days of date of order or another 30 days as directed by the court on sufficient cause being shown by the appellant that I don't have money or I'm organizing. So another 30 days. So what has happened is, so they have also put some kind of entry barrier to appeal. So if they're saying if you are appealing, then not you have to pay 20% more first, and then only you can appeal. So therefore, they are trying to be very clear and reduce the pendency of such cases. And the appellate court has also been given the power to release the said amount in favor of the complainant at any time during the pendency of appeal. So if the appellate court feels favorable towards the complainant, then this 20% which they have taken, they can also release that money in addition to the interim compensation that he has received to the till the appeal has been addressed. And if the appellant is acquitted from the offense and the appellant court, for example, finds that there is sufficient reason to acquit the appellant, then the court instructs the complainant to repay the entire amount that he has received to the appellant. And section 143 has no retrospective effect, while section 148 only applies to the pending appeals on the date of enactment of the new amendment. So only after that, whichever are pending appeals, then there only section 148 now gets applied. So 143A says nothing behind, only from today henceforth. Section 148 says whatever is pending as to in the appeals court, this act section is applicable to that, which makes sense. So section 148 empowers the appellant court to order the drawer to deposit such amount which shall be minimum 20% of the fine or compensation awarded by the trial court, and such deposit is in addition to the interim compensation already paid under an order passed under section 143A of the amendment. And the deposit is to be made subject to the following procedure and condition laid down in the section. So first is, they have now standardized the time. They have said you have to deposit the money if the court wants within 60 days on the from the date of order of payment, And in case you have some challenges organizing that fund, then you go to the court, and if the court so finds it reasonable, then they give you another 30 days. So within 90 days, but any reason, you'll have to pay the money. The second is the appellant court can give this money also additional to the interim compensation to the complainant if they find there is reasonable ground to do so. And if the appellant is acquitted, that means he's found correct, the complainant then shall be directed to pay the amount to the deposit along with the interest of the bank rate as published by the RBI at the beginning of the year, financial year. And the repayment now also has to be paid within 60 days. And suppose if the complainant cannot pay and goes to the court, and only maximum of another 30 days can be provided to the complainant. And that also if the court is convinced that there is sufficient cause for this delay. So now, having understood this amendment, both from the drawer side, the complainant side, and in normal course and in case of appeal, let's look at the critical analysis of this amendment. So obviously, with every amendment or every act, there is always some merit and there could be some demerits or lacunas in this process. So let's look at the merits. Now, the merit of such amendment is that it helps in tackling delay in the proceedings under the Act, leading to quicker relief. The Act also description is also being provided to the court to assess the facts and circumstances of the case. The imposition of compensation is called for and to what extent. They have only put maximum 20%, but it could be compensation could be 10%, 15%, 5% and so on. So this prevents prejudicial treatment of drawer and equitable treatment of the parties. The provisions are compliance centric and are aimed to safeguard their interests. So anyone who feels aggrieved on receiving of check not getting honored, then these provisions are actually in their favor. Section 148 protects the complainant from endless appeals and stay. So if the drawer goes for appeals and stays, and also Section 148 clearly closes that area out. And these provisions create a framework of certainty and stringency. So they have a deterrent effect on those who seek to preclude the rights of others through dishonor of checks and consequent illicit and evasive tactics. So what this amendment has done is, it's cut down the delayed tactics which people were using in the past and brought some closures and a deterrent for them to go to appeal or delay the case. And these amendments, because there is a deterrent, it reduces the pendency of courts because of the deterrent effect. So the court feels, or the government feels, that with these amendments, the number of cases that will go to appeal or delay, that may also come down, and therefore the overall pendencies will start reducing. Now, what are the challenges of this amendment? So there's a feeling that this section 148 operates in the prejudice of the accused, as imposition of cost upon the drawer without final determination operates on the presumption of guilt against the drawer. So there is a feeling that on one hand, you're telling the drawer to give 20% interim compensation, maximum 20% interim compensation. And if the drawer goes to the appeal under 148, then under 148 in the appeal also, you can ask additional 20% to be deposited with the court first, which means you already assumed that the drawer could be at fault. So therefore, they feel that it's a presumption of guilt against the drawer. So this is the feeling right now. Only with evidence and more data being collected, we'll find out if that is the case. So the other challenges which people have expressed is that this amendment provides for unbridled discretion to the court, which in turn leads to increased litigation and pendency of cases in the courts. So they are saying that everything is at the discretion of the court and there is no limit to it. Therefore, there may be more litigation and pendency of cases. Again, over a period of time, this can be checked or verified. Now, although there is a provision which says if the drawer is acquitted, the court shall order complainant to return the money from the sum received by him under Section 148. In practice, the same provision would turn out to be very contentious in cases where the complaint either refuses or is unable to return the sum because of the inability to do so. This would give further litigation. So while he has received interim compensation and additional compensation, and if the complainant cannot return that money or refuses to do so, then this may lead to further litigation for the recovery of this money. So that's another side effect which they feel can come out of this. And under the above mentioned provision, for the repayment of the sum by the complainant to the drawer, the complainant must make a payment of interest along with the principal sum. So it also acts as a prejudice to the complainant, who might be wary to even request to the court to order the drawer to make payment of interim compensation, as in the event if the court finds favor with the drawer, he'll have to not only pay back the money but also pay interest on it. So this is another area which the lawyers and everyone feels that may lead to act against the prejudice to the complainant as well. So to conclude, the judicial system is facing a huge backlog of cases, and as per the 213th Law Commission report, about 20% of the cases relating to litigation pertains to check bounce. Therefore, obviously, with this huge percentage, if you can address it, you can bring the backlog of cases lower. So the newly introduced provision would give them some life to the dead provisions of the Negotiable Instrument Act. The check offense cases are penal in nature and bring home criminal offense. But still, the provisions of summary trial is on papers, and making the offense bailable has made the check bounces case almost similar to the civil dispute. So in check bounce case, you have bailable thing. Therefore, if you are given bail, then it has become equal to a civil dispute, although its intent is not that. Intent is to criminalize it. The newly introduced provisions would indeed be proactive step towards safeguarding the credibility of check. That everyone agrees. And though it is in positive direction of check offense, still more needs to be done to make the check bounce case practical, and summary trial has to be given its true meaning. Otherwise, the whole purpose being introduced on check bounce as criminal offense would lose its importance. So with this, I hope you have understood that why these amendments were required in the Negotiable Instrument Act. And hopefully the time will tell whether these amendments made any dent in reducing the backlog of the case. So happy reading, and thank you for the patient listening.